Good morning and happy Saturday. You are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. A musician, songwriter, artist, and a music teacher, she has been the owner and founder of Russell Music Teaching Studios in Waterloo for the last 8 years and has been teaching for 18 years. A powerhouse vocalist and an apt multi-instrumentalist is Charlena Russell, who will be joining me in conversation a little later. But first, I will be chatting with a curvy movement maker, leading women to a stylish place of self-love and fashion confidence, one consignment at a time. Carly Roberts, the founder of Consign Your Curves. Thank you, Carly, for joining me in studio this morning. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me how this journey even began for you. Like, what began the whole curvy movement, Consign Your Curves hashtag?
Yeah, so back in the mid-early millennium, so it's like, what, 2007, I had a fashion blog called Friends in My Closet, and I really enjoy doing it. But as someone who is constantly taking photos, you acquire a lot of clothes to be able to do this. And I needed to empty out my closet a little bit. And I really struggled to find a place that would accept 12 and up consignment. And I thought, I knew a bunch of people in the industry at the time. Blogging is way different then than it is now. And I said, if I'm having this problem, somebody else has to be having this problem as well. And we decided to just sell our clothes. I had attended a clothing sale similar to a swap, but okay, a swap, you swap clothes. This was an actual sale where you would purchase people's clothes for bloggers at the time, that like we could meet our fans and they could come shop our closets. And I thought to myself, my mom would never drive to downtown Toronto for something that she didn't necessarily know, right? So I thought there's got to be a lot of other people that would like a more centralized location. And I'm based out of Guelph, which is a fairly centralized location. So in 2013, I gathered like-minded individuals and we hosted our first Consign Your Curves. We did that for six years, and then I decided to open, I had the opportunity to open up a store. That's how we got started.
And you've had some celebrities donate clothes as well. How did you get them to do that?
So I think the community of the influencer, but back then was the blogging community, is really tiny in Ontario in terms of the curvy demographic. And because I provided this space to people and I was part of that community, it was word of mouth. And I would just say, hey, do you want to come sell your stuff? And because they also had the similar predicament that they were creating content and they had so much stuff, it was an outlet for them. So at first it became asking, but the community is pretty small and it's pretty amazing. So we're all fairly supportive of each other's endeavors, which is really awesome. And then as we got a little bit bigger every year, we would get maybe somebody new that maybe I didn't know but had come on board, and I just asked.
Tell me about the annual Clean Your Closet sale that you host. Do you encourage people from the community to come and donate their clothes there? How does that work?
Yeah, so we have, I would say it's like a 60-40 split, and I would say maybe closer to 50-50. But we have people of influence, so like those people that you mentioned, bloggers, a few television personalities, sell their clothes. But the other half is all regular, everyday women who just have a ton of clothes. Mm-hmm. When you are curvy, it is really hard to find clothing. So you hold on to it, and you covet it, and you don't want to just drop it off a donation box because you're like, I spend $100 on that dress. You just don't want to give it away. So even the regular everyday woman who's curvy has a ton of clothes. So we encourage them to come out and sell their clothes as well. Then the sale is mostly attended by 300 women from all over. So they've come up from the United States. We've had people rent hotel rooms. They'll drive down from Owen Sound. Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. But I think that the lack of diversity in options in the market to purchase clothes, our sale provides one other opportunity to get your hands on something different because there's not a lot of options.
No.
For example, in the city of Guelph, we're 150,000 people, and my store is the second one you can shop in if you're over a size 12.
So how important was it for you to be the voice for other plus-size women out there?
I didn't intend to be the voice at all. Some days it's quite pressure-filled having a leading position when I would always say, like, I'll carry the torch, but if someone else would like to join me on this path, it would be really nice, but I'll continue to blaze the trail. I didn't set out to be that way, but I definitely feel the pressure to continue or to expand or, you know, to be the voice. I'm a little bit different in the influencer world that I'm not a typical influencer. Like, I have a store, so a portion of that is, like, the sales side of it. Mm-hmm. But I will continue to lead and try to expand, and I'm so thankful for all the women that put me on their shoulders and, you know, hoist me forward to be able to do what I do. So it's really nice.
And what does body confidence mean to you? And when you sell the clothes that you put up at your store, it's important to feel confident yourself before, you know, you approach these women. So, and being comfortable in your own body also plays a huge part. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah, right now I think the buzzword in the world is body positivity, but you're absolutely right. We have to step back, and it's a body confidence issue. And we always say in the store, it doesn't matter if you're a size 2, 12, or 22, body confidence is a complete issue across all boards, even for men, which some people don't think of. I think, again, as women, we are trained to think of that we only have to aspire to be this, you know, Kate Moss looking person. So body confidence is huge for me. I sit in a store all day where women typically come in and are apprehensive about putting something on, and I try to push people out. I think my own body confidence journey has come from, I grew up in like the 80s and 90s. So curvy women were not like, they were everywhere. Like, there was Oprah and Gabby Reese and Missy Elliott. Like, I grew up seeing characters that, you know, weren't all one dimensional, which was really nice. And I guess through, you know, reading and adapting and trying to be fairly cultured in the world, you only get one life, and you read that all the time, but you might as well just be happy. Mm-hmm. I always say, like, you can't lose 40 pounds or gain 40 pounds in one weekend. It is a journey, if whatever journey you're on to self-love, but you have to embrace every inch of your body at all times, because it's such a waste to go on hating your body for so long. So I think I've just accepted who I am, and whatever size that may be, because life's too short to hate yourself.
Absolutely. Were there times in your life where you were made to feel you were not enough?
Yeah, I grew up as a figure skater. So I didn't grow up, for lack of better terminology, like super large in that capacity. So not really. I was never bullied for my size, which I'm like very thankful for, because kids can, of course, be very mean. But I think I doubt myself. But I think if you lead with confidence, everyone has to follow. If you're putting your best foot forward and embracing whatever that physical feature about yourself that you feel apprehensive about, if you're not talking about it, nobody else will, right? Self-deprecation humor is one thing. But if you're hiding behind something, people pick up on that. So the old expression, fake it till you make it kind of idea.
Works.
Yeah, it works. I think it works. I think it comes, like, it plays in so many facets of life.
It does. Today's era where, you know, people are more vocal about what they feel and what people go through, I think it's more important to come out and share the opinions and ideas and what each one goes through, what they say. And
I mean, there's the old expression that opinions are like a certain body part. Everybody has one. And it's true. You just have to, like, be true to yourself and be true to whatever is that you're wanting or you believe in life. And if you believe in it, other people will follow and believe in you. Absolutely. They'll fall in line.
So when you meet other women outside your store who are plus size women, and you also give talks at different venues and different platforms. So body positive image, when you talk to them about it, I'm sure some of them would have come back to you and shared their stories with you. So what do you tell these women?
I think that's a very tough question. Thank you for asking it. I mean, I think everyone comes from their own journey, so it's really hard for me to, you know, tell someone that their feelings aren't valid in that regard. That's their story. So I have to own their experience. When people come into the store, let's put it in this context, and they say, I can't wear shorts. I'm like, you can wear shorts. You just choose not to, and that's okay. So I think sometimes when you're validating someone's journey, it's you're validating them. They're right in what they feel, but they can't dwell in it. I always say you have to move forward. So you can't say the word can't, because you can do whatever you want in life. You just choose not to, and that can be okay. But I think we have to take the negative out of things, because mm-hmm. you make those words so much heavier than they need to be. And so to move on. So changing your narrative or embracing your narrative and stepping forward with a clean slate is something I always try to like tell people and to move forward. It's okay to like have that moment, but let's move forward.
What influence do you think visual social media platforms, we have Instagram, we have Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, there are tons out there, have on the way we as a society communicate what is beautiful? Because, you know, people compare, people look at different images, there's magazines, there's a certain body style that's, you know, portrayed out there. And with social media being so interactive these days, what do you think as a society we are communicating what is beautiful?
I think back when we only got magazines and television, like you and I don't fit into that quintessential role. However, I think with the adaptation of social media, what is the old expression? I can't remember who said it, but like the medium is the message, right? So this is great. So if the medium is social media and you're choosing to consume it, you control the message, which I think is phenomenal. Meaning I don't have to follow anybody's account and consume any of their stuff that they're putting out there if I don't want to. I think that's brilliant. So I love social media. If you're following somebody and they make you feel like crap every time you're scrolling your feed or you're tuning into your Facebook, remove it. You are physically choosing to read the message that you want to consume. So fill up your feed, fill up your Snapchat with all the messages you want to hear or the people that you want to see. We spend, and I'm a culprit of it too, but we spend so much time consuming social media mm-hmm. and it's all stuff you've chosen to consume. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We choose to follow that person that makes us feel like crap. Same with the people that you keep in your life, right? Like you want to get rid of that toxic person, they say. Easier said than done in some situations, but you're choosing to keep them there. So if you fill up your feed with all these amazing on my end of the line with curvy influencers and people that make you feel inspired, then the time that you spend consuming that media, you will be so much better off with. And listen, I love a good filter. I love when something like cuts my jawline and makes me look phenomenal. But I also know that like I had to swipe through 7 filters to get to it. So I always want to try to be as real and authentic as I can. But sometimes, like, I mean, if you like smooth out my skin, I'm not going to lie, I'm okay with it. So I think playing around with it. But if you're choosing to consume the media, you can consume what you want to consume. So don't waste your time on anything else. And I think nowadays, since it's in a palm of our hands, we have so much more control over what we see. And I don't think people realize that.
It's easy to get sucked into it, right? And then you don't realize you've spent hours just hating yourself doing that.
Totally. But you've selected all those people on your Instagram mm-hmm. feed, mm-hmm. which is the crazy thing that I think we're going to slowly come around to, is realizing that you don't have to follow the person that you dislike, whoever that is.
And it comes back to, again, our powerful minds, right? Yeah. Because we can control what we think, how we want to spend that time.
And if you're going to air quotes waste the time, why don't you waste it on something that makes you feel better?
Absolutely. In your store, when other people come in to swap clothes, how does that work? Like, can anybody walk in and bring the clothes that they want to swap? Or they have to is there a place to donate?
Yeah, so we recommend that you don't come in and consign the clothes off your back, because you'd leave naked and that's not socially acceptable. So yeah, we have a set of guidelines. So obviously, first and foremost, you know, you want everything to be like clean, as new as possible. We don't focus on certain brands because the curvy market is so small. All brands have relevance in our store. Sometimes you just need a basic, and maybe that's from Walmart. But if I'm going to take it into our store, it's going to be the best condition. It's going to have a tag and it's going to be priced accordingly. We try to stay seasonal. We pay out a certain percentage of the goods after they sell, not before. And I always recommend to people, before you come in with your amazing stuff, read over our guidelines on our website under the tab how to consign, so that if we're not looking for something specific, for instance, this past fall, we were not looking for any more jeans in the 12, 14, 16 range. We just had too many. Then you know if that's all you were bringing me, maybe hold off for a little bit. So there is a set of guidelines. I try to keep the standard in our store fairly high. The nice thing is because we have consigners literally from Ottawa to Windsor, we get an amazing variety of things, which is like totally awesome.
Is it just clothes, or you even take shoes and jewelry and stuff like
that? Yeah, so we don't take any jewelry or bags, really, because we really try to focus on the clothes. Shoes always fit, so you can kind of go everywhere for that stuff. We do look at some shoes, but only shoes that are brand new would be considered. We don't have a lot of shelf space, and the shelf space I do have, I want to use to support other local women businesses with their products versus the thing that you can find literally at hundreds of stores, consignment or retail.
And in today's times, again, sustainability is a huge topic of discussion, and environment plays a big part there too. So how is your store, or what you're doing, contributing to the climate and everything else?
I've always been a bit of a green thumb. In my last office, they would joke I had a lot of plants. I didn't necessarily, when CYC started, I didn't think about the sustainability factor of it. It was just a way to, like, to be honest, make a bit of money and turn over my closet. Now that we're literally, you know, pun intended, the climate that we're in, I'm really happy to be able to provide a footprint. So the lot of the clothes, we have like over 2,000, 3,000 pieces of clothing in our store. Some days I look at that and I go, wow, just the curvy community could contribute to a landfill, and we're choosing not to. And I'm really happy to have a place that I am proud to have that footprint in the world, that at least we're doing our little bit, which is why I'd like all of our stores across the nation, of course, so that we're all doing a little bit more. But I look at just what the 12 plus market could potentially do, and we're not, and that makes my little green heart happy. So.
And where can women reach you, like your social media handles, or where can listeners find you online, if you can share that information?
Absolutely.
As well?
So our website is consignyourcurves.com. And we are available on Facebook at Consign Your Curves and Instagram at Consign Your Curves. We do have a very infrequent newsletter that you can sign up for. It's very infrequent, so don't get your hopes up. And yeah, we have Twitter, that it's at Consign UR Curves.
Okay. Anything you would like to tell the women out there listening in?
I always say, just be nicer to yourself. If you are nicer to the vessel of which you take on the world, you will be nicer to everyone else. And I think in a world right now where everything is a little bit chaotic, niceness goes so much further. That's niceness at a red light. If you're in a better mood, you will be nicer to the person who cut you off. I think you will be nicer to your neighbor. And more importantly, when you're nice to yourself, that's the person that matters. Because as you know, the expression of the airline, you got to put your oxygen mask on first before dealing with anybody else. So just be nicer.
Thank you so much, Carly, again.
Thank you for having me.
For sharing your amazing work that you do and inspiring so many women out there to follow their dreams, start whatever they wish to start, take that first step, and to be comfortable in their own skin and love themselves for who they are. So thank you again for joining me in studio this morning, and stay tuned. I will be right back with my next guest, Sherlina Russell. Welcome back, and you are listening in conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. My next guest, Sherlina Russell, is a musician, songwriter, artist, and a music teacher. She has been the owner and founder of Russell Music Teaching Studios in Waterloo. Thank you so much, Sherlina, for coming in and joining me in studio this morning, bracing that crazy weather we've been having. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Growing up, has music always been a part of your life?
Absolutely. I started learning music when I was 12. But ever since I was 4, I wanted to play the violin. Luckily, because I'm stubborn, that was one of the first instruments I was fortunate enough to learn to play. So, yeah.
And what kind of music do you play? You are a jazzy electronica. So what really is that?
Basically, growing up, I loved everything. I listened to like alternative rock and Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins, but I also really loved old jazz. My mom was a Motown girl, so I grew up listening to Prince. David Bowie was a huge influence, still is. And then, of course, you know, anyone who knows me knows I love Bjork. And I guess I found her music when I was about 10. And she inspired me enough to travel to Iceland and write electronic music. And I got into trip hop, classic jazz, classical pieces. I love all music. So,
music started at a very young age for you. So do you think music has shaped you, who you are as a person today?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, because I started learning when I was 12, a big turning point for me, in grade 2, I moved to a different school, and I was bullied, and I just had a really hard time. And in grade 6, I transferred to middle school, because that was that time of life, and I started learning music. And I really just, I feel, found myself. And I stopped hanging out with the cool, mean girls and started, like, hiding in the library and reading. And I joined Army Cadets and just practiced my violin and trumpet, like, every day. And I'd like to thank Mr. Nicholson, because he was the school music teacher who taught me. And he gave me free violin lessons during my lunch break. And my family didn't have a lot of money, so that meant the world to us, especially to me. And I went from being a kid who got like pretty terrible grades to getting straight A's that year. And I looked at my report card and I thought it was someone else. I was like, there's a mistake. Something is wrong. And honestly, it wasn't until I started learning music that everything clicked for me. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I had a passion. I had something that was mine that I was proud of, and I was able to express myself regardless of genre or emotion. I started songwriting, which got me through high school. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank Mr. Houghton, who was my high school music teacher, because he really pushed me and was a huge influencer and helped me to know what steps to take to do music for a living, and told me, you know, go study with Dan Warren from the KW Symphony and go here and come sing in the St. Andrew's Choir. And he gave me so many opportunities to not only perform in school, but outside of school. So, mm-hmm. you know, my music teachers growing up, Anita Noel, who was at the Beckett School, I was with her for a decade. And she was like an aunt, a therapist, and a teacher. And just, you know, those people, they really helped to, like, shape who I am.
And do those emotions sometimes come out in the music you play as well?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It does. Eh? Because they say songwriting and music can emote what you feel. Mm-hmm. So does that help in healing for you?
Absolutely. Like, as a child and growing up being someone who dealt with a lot of intersectionality, being someone mixed race, my parents were divorced when I was 3, and most of my friends, like, their parents were still together. My mom is American, so there were, like, just, like, even though it's only 3 hours away, the States, there were lots of, like, cross-cultural differences and, like, comparisons and different things like that. And then growing up and discovering that I'm also a queer person from the LGBTQ community, that was another thing. So I was always, like, the weird kid, and music for me was the place where I wasn't weird. And like David Bowie, like, he's like, I remember just watching him as a child and being mesmerized by him, Prince as well, and thinking they were so powerful and beautiful, and they were able to like get their emotions out, whether they were frustrations or joy or they were in love or they just wanted to like have a message and have people hear it. And that for me was just, it made me feel like, wow, there's someone out there who understands me. There's someone out there who thinks the way I think. Mm-hmm. And when I write songs, it's so satisfying when I have someone come up to me that here's a song I wrote, and they say, wow, thank you so much, because I really needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I had a performance at the Boathouse years ago, and I performed this one song that I wrote once. And I was performing it for the second time, and there was a young woman in the front, sitting like front center, and she was singing the words back to me. And it startled me, because I was like, oh my God, how did she know the words to my song? Because it wasn't online, it wasn't anywhere, mm-hmm. other than the one other time I performed it. And afterwards, she said it meant so much to me that I would sing it, like it got stuck in my head, and I remembered the lyrics. I couldn't believe it. Like, it just floored
and
me.
And you brought your ukulele with you here.
I did.
Would you like to play for our listeners?
I would love to.
They would love to enjoy hearing you too. So I'll let you take over the mic and play a little something for us so our listeners can enjoy that too.
All right. So this is not one of my songs. Speaking of David Bowie, I've kind of mentioned him a couple of times, but the anniversary of his birthday and his passing just happened. And when I was a kid, I was obsessed with The Labyrinth. Since I was 4, it was like the movie I had to watch every day as a toddler. And then in high school, I like forced my Bob Houghton, my high school music teacher, to watch it in class at the end of the year. So this is called As the World Falls Down. And he wrote it for that movie, which he acted in. Hopefully you can hear the ukulele.
There's such a sad love, deep in your eyes, a kind of pale jewel. Opened and closed within your eyes, I'll place the sky within your eyes. There's such a fooled heart, beating so fast in search of new dreams, a love that will last within your heart, I'll place the moon within your heart. As the pain sweeps through, makes no sense for you. Every thrill has gone, wasn't too much fun at all. But I'll be there for you, hoo-hoo, as the world falls down. Falling in love. I'll paint you mornings of gold, spin you Valentine evenings, though we're strangers till now. We're choosing a path between the stars. I'll lay my love between the stars. As the pain sweeps through, makes no sense for you. Every thrill has gone, wasn't too much fun at all. But I'll be there for you, woo-hoo, as the world falls down. Falling, falling in love. As the world falls down, falling, falling in love.
That was beautiful. Thank you. That was absolutely beautiful. So, talking about teaching,
yes,
and what teachers have played a big role in your life.
Yeah.
You also started teaching music. How did that journey begin for you?
Oh, I was 19. I had just moved to Kitchener-Waterloo. John Belton, he wasn't a music teacher to me, but he was an amazing boss who taught me a lot. He was the owner of Sherwood Music. And when I finished high school, I had left home at 18, so I didn't go to post-secondary. I just continued studying privately and doing all of my conservatory exams. So he gave me a job at Sherwood Music, and one of my coworkers asked me to join his goth electronic band and sing backup vocals and play my electric violin. And I said yes to that. And basically, I just suddenly had a band and a great job that I loved. And I decided, hey, I'm going to move to Waterloo. And there's a music scene here I was starting to become a part of, performing at the open mics. And I was learning my violin with Margaret Zach from the Guelph Symphony. And I said to her, do you think I could teach? And she said, yes, yes, you should. You should try. And she was so encouraging. So I said, okay. So I was at Sherwood, and this lovely woman came in named Tina, and she was looking for violin lessons. And I said, well, I teach. And so I started teaching when I was 19-year-old on my Sundays off, Sunday afternoons, and quickly that filled. John from Sherwood invited me to also teach at the studio there. And then from there, I started teaching at community centers. And then suddenly, well, not suddenly, but slowly after a number of years, yes, yeah. I was a full-time music teacher, quit the retail. And then I was turning people away because I had a waiting list. And I thought, you know, I should do something to make more opportunities and find other like-minded teachers and create a larger community. Mm-hmm. And basically, just give our community more opportunities to have amazing teachers that not only teach with classical technique, but then allow students to have an existential one-on-one customized lesson. So basically, whatever they're excited about, whether it's Taylor Swift or Outkast, you know, like whatever it is, you want to learn AC/DC on violin, let's do that along with your scales, and let's give you technique, and let's, you know, take a Paramore song, throw it on a violin, and teach you how to shift into second position. Like, just different things that most people wouldn't think to do. Because, you know, not everyone, you know, no one likes my favorite song. So I want to teach your favorite songs.
And is that how Russell Music Teaching Studio came to be?
Yeah, yeah. So about, basically, it took me about 2 years of planning. And then I opened up the school and found an amazing team, which is still growing and changing. And yeah.
And you also have got us a music that we can listen of what you've sung, which is Save You.
Yes.
What is that music about?
Ooh, well, it started out when I wrote it. I think that you can always learn from music, and this song to me has shifted over the years as I've learned more about myself. But when I wrote it, I was writing it about someone that I really cared about, and I was trying to, like, wake them up. And I was saying, I'm going to save you from yourself. I'm going to help you. And as time went on, I realized that the only person you can really save in this world is yourself. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can only help people who want to help themselves. So absolutely. In this life, you know, we can push people as much as they allow us to push them. And so as this song has grown and I've worked with it, and it's kind of shifted into, you know, like into self-love.
Absolutely.
And not always just, you know, giving unless someone lets you. Then, of course, you can help them as well.
What you put out in your songs, like we have spoken before, and your teaching school, you have kids who come there to learn different music. Do those words kind of flow into your teaching style as well?
Yes, absolutely. You can only teach someone who wants to be taught, you know. But also, I think, you know, part of the big thing for me is I want to, you know, when I kind of figure out how I want to teach, I think about how I wanted to be taught when I was a kid, right? And I think about, you know, what I needed. Mm-hmm. And so I try to, like, really listen to my students and give them what they need and be that teacher for them. Basically, I take all of my favorite things from all of the teachers who pushed me And I try to give all of those things to my students and pass those things along and give them that confidence and love and encouragement and gain their trust.
And I'm going to play Save You that Charlena, did you write the song as well?
I did, yeah. I wrote it and co-produced it, Ryan Alexanian.
So I'm going to play that. You can listen to it right now, and Charlena will be right back.
Will you dance with me till morning?
Thank you, Charlena, for that beautiful music. Going back to your music teaching studio, what are the kind of programs you offer there?
At Russell Music Teaching Studios, we have one-on-one private lessons for the most part that run as a weekly lesson. You can do half an hour or hour-long lessons depending on your needs and your kind of your level that you're learning at. We also have a rock band class, which is happening now through till March. It happens every winter on Saturdays. And basically we get kids in groups of in between 3 and 6, kids or teens, and then they choose the songs and I custom arrange the pieces to their playing abilities and challenge them over 9 weeks, and then they perform as a band. Okay. So that's happening right now. We have 4 workshops per year. We have one coming up January 25th. It's a music theory workshop. For students at the studio, it's included in the price. It's also free for their friends and family or anyone from the community who wants to also join in. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that there should be classes that are offered for those who can't afford lessons. Mm-hmm. So basically the music theory class would help with learning to read music, time signatures, and kind of the behind the scenes mm-hmm. language of music, reading. Yeah. And then we also have summer camps, and those are a lot of fun. It's a summer music and art camp. So we do everything from yoga to teaching really cool painting techniques. One time we made beeswax lip balm out of all natural products.
Nice.
We go to the park and do art projects outside. And then they also play as a band twice a day. So we have a campfire session in the early or in the morning half, first mm-hmm. half of the day. And they vote on the songs, and then I arrange it for that week. And then in the afternoon, we call it like pop rock, right? Mm-hmm. Like more upbeat songs. Mm-hmm. We plug in the microphones, all those things. And then we also have music theory, all kinds of things. So
all this information, where can our listeners find them? Can you share your social media handles and
Absolutely.
Your website information?
Yeah,
please?
So we have our websites, russell-music-school.com. Russell has two S's and two L's. And then we're also on Facebook and Instagram at Russell Music Teaching Studios, and studios is plural. And then the summer camps, we have July 13th to 17th, July 27th to 31st, and August 10th to 14th.
The students who come in, certain kids have certain challenges. So do you accommodate those requests as well?
Absolutely. Any students that have special needs, like I've had students on the spectrum, and they thrive in our studio. We actually have a number of teachers who also specialize in music therapy. So whether or not they are graduates or they're almost done graduating. So we have teachers who really, customize not only to the students' musical style, but also their learning style and any emotional needs that they have. So we have lots of students with, all kinds of different needs and wants.
Thank you so much, Charlena, for sharing your journey with our listeners and with me, and wishing you the very best. And I'm sure a lot of people will be looking up your website and trying to find the information. And thanks for playing that ukulele. It was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. To know more about my upcoming guests, you can follow me on my Facebook page, In Conversation with Rashmi, my Instagram page. It's at @RASHSANJ. Have a story you want to share or anything else that you would like to share with our listeners? You can email me. It's onairwithrashmi@gmail.com. It's onairwithrashmi@gmail.com. So signing off for today. Have a wonderful weekend.